Testing 1, 2, 3.
We're all set.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this meeting of the Inner West Local Planning Panel. The planning panel consists of experts and a community person who also happens to be an expert. And we're all independent of the council, and all of us will ultimately in a few minutes declare. I expect that there have been no pecuniary or other conflicts of interests identified, so that we stand before you as an independent panel to determine the matters that are listed for our consideration. First of all, I must acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation, on whose country we are meeting today, and their elders past and present. I will in a moment ask each of the panel members to introduce themselves so that you know who's who and what their respective expertise is as they explain it to you. Each item on the agenda will be dealt with serratium. However, item number 10, we will be taking submissions in that at the commencement. That's the only change to the order in which the matters will be dealt with. My name is Angus Talbot, and I think the reason that I'm on this panel is that I spent many years as a barrister working in the local government field, and I was also fortunate to serve for 15 years as a judge of the Land and Environment Court. And then I've been fiddling around in the area since and doing a number of these panels such as this one. I'll start from the left and ask Ms. Day to introduce herself and tell you who she is.
Good afternoon. I'm a consultant town planner. I have my own practice based in Sydney. I have a mix of local government and private sector clients. I graduated the first time 40 years ago. It's gone quickly. I've worked in state and local government as well as the private sector. I have degrees in geography and town and country planning, and I'm a member of the Planning Institute of Australia. And next year I'm looking forward to mentoring a young graduate planner for 12 months.
Thank you, Mr. Hall.
My name's Ken Hawke, and I'm the community representative on this panel. I've lived in the Inner West for the past 45 years, and I had a 40-year career in local government planning, ending with a directorship of the old Marrickville Council as Director of Planning and Environmental Services.
Thank you. Ms. Morrell.
Good afternoon, Jan Morrell. I'm a planner with over 40 years' experience, not that it's a competition up here, but my last permanent position was as Commissioner with the Land and Environment Court for 14 years, and since my retirement some 6-7 years ago, I sit on and chair independent panels. And prior to being with the court, I was the Corporate Manager of Environment, Planning and Development at Liverpool City Council. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, as I said, we'll go through the items, as dealing with item number 10 and the people listed to speak first. And each person will be given 3 minutes. There will be an opportunity for the panel to ask questions, which of course will not be counted within the 3 minutes. But the first item, therefore, that comes before the panel for discussion is item number 10, which relates to the property 69 to 73 Beattie Street, Balmain. And I understand that there's a number of people listed to speak. I suspect it might be more as a team rather than as individuals, but I may have mistaken the understanding there. But I'll call the first person and then you can deal with it as you see fit. Graham Brooks Heritage. looking pretty individual at the moment. And you need to press the red button.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Graham Brooks. I am an independent heritage advisor. I have been asked by the applicant and the project team for this project to do an independent peer review. I was intending to be the second speaker because we have our planner, Ms. Deb Dickinson, who is sitting behind me, and only the two of us will speak. And the others are available for questions, should you so choose.
Thank you very much. That's good news.
I thought you'd like it, sir. If I might just say, I believe you received my one-page summary.
Yes.
In the paper, so I won't read that in detail. I just wanted to pick up a number of key points. As a peer reviewer, my job was to go right back through the last 3 or 4 or 5 years of the history of this project, try and understand what happened and what went wrong. My client was pleased enough to criticise me for criticising the applicant as much as I was commenting on council's responses. But what it did say to me was that there needs to be a focus in this particular venue on the modification. I think one of the problems over the last 5 years has been a lot of confusion as to what was approved in 2015 and what was still outstanding. So if I can emphasise, not that I need to with such an expert panel, but this is an application for a modification of an existing consent. And in my understanding, and I think our team's understanding, almost everything that's been criticised in some ways as being too much intervention was all approved in 2015. We're now talking about a very marginal degree of change. If I can just go through the 5 or 6 points that were in the council's summary. Sleep area number 2, structural upgrading and linkage. I have negotiated with the applicant that instead of dismantling or demolishing the common wall between the two halves of those two buildings, that they would in fact retain those walls, simply needle through them, cut a slice through it at the floor level, and basically do what the engineer really wants, which is to establish a consistent concrete slab at that floor level to tie the two buildings together. So I think there's a very strong structural outcome that we can achieve and basically very little physical impact. Secondly, the retention of the herringbone structure, that is to be retained. The facade repairs on Little Llewellyn Street, they simply comprise basically taking out rusted and decayed columns and beams and replacing them exactly the same as they are now, only in better condition. The external cladding, there'd been a long debate as to whether the external cladding could be changed, should be changed, was fire rated, etc. What we're now suggesting for your consideration is that the approved material, the Core 10 cladding, on the main part of the new buildings facing Beattie Street, be extended across all of that building component instead of there being two materials. I think that's going to provide the unity and the scale. I have a very short
Mr. Brooks,
to finish
can
off.
You bring it to an end?
I can very quickly. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Stormwater retention, the downpipes have already been approved for dismantling. Excavation at basement level is in rock, has been designed very carefully by the engineer. And fundamentally, panel, I believe that the current proposal in its now suggested form will create no adverse impacts on the building themselves, which are not listed, but primarily on the conservation area. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think Mr. Hawkes has a question for you.
No, I'm fine at the moment.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll call on the second speaker, Deborah Dickerson. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm the town planning consultant for this application to modify the development consent. Thank you very much for considering our submissions earlier to enable the whole team to be here, to be available to you to answer questions. So in addition to our independent heritage peer review expert, Graham Brooks, we also have available for you today, well, they're not speaking, but they're just so you know they're here. Yeah. We have the architect, Christian Farrell, our heritage consultant, Kara May Danis, structural engineer, Rob McGowan, and civil engineer Matthew Buttarelli. You would have seen when you've gone to the site inspection that these former warehouse buildings are sort of now largely uninhabitable, and parts of the building are in fact quite derelict. They're not heritage listed buildings, and the proposed modification to the existing consent, we believe, involves quite minor changes to the approved development to ensure compliance with BCA safety and structural concerns. The primary external changes that will be visible within the Heritage Conservation Area is substituting some of the building material from timber to metal. That's some of the new building materials, replacement and repair of the steel columns in Little Llewellyn Street, and amending a glass balustrade on some of the decks to achieve better safety and amenity and sort of building appearance outcomes. The council officer report, as you would have read, fundamentally recommends refusal based on a perceived lack of information in relation to heritage impacts. So in the spirit of trying to constructively resolve this, the applicant has engaged Mr. Brooks to review it. And he sort of come back and concluded that most of these heritage matters are relatively minor and could be resolved with some simple consent conditions. Some technical matters were also raised in relation to OSD, and we agree with the officer's report. Ordinarily, this would be addressed with consent conditions as well. Again, so on balance, we believe that the building as modified will be a better outcome for the building, for the safety and functionality of the childcare centre, and also for the amenity of the neighbouring residents. If the panel agrees that the minor modifications are worthy of approval, to assist the panel, we've drafted up the consent conditions for you to consider so that you're not there with a blank piece of paper. I have them here. I also have them on a USB if it would assist the panel if you were minded to approve the development application. Thank you very much.
Have some further feedback from the council officers after hearing the submissions. We resolve to hear the submissions now, and then having met the convenience of your party in dealing with the matter first, we will actually defer until the end of the meeting, back to item number 10, the actual determination. But in the meantime, I'd invite you to hand up those conditions, and I think Mr. Hawkes has something to say.
Thank you for bringing such a team with you. We only got your papers this morning, and they've taken, and of course we've been very busy. So we are minded, we are fairly sympathetic to the submissions you've made. However, we do need to look at the conditions and possibly tweak them, get the officer's input and so forth, which is happening as we speak, and we'll come to some conclusion later in the afternoon.
Can I inquire whether you propose to have a representative here sometime after 4 o'clock, or will we defer it now to be published in the minutes?
I can certainly be here after 5 o'clock.
Someone will be here.
Yes,
all right. Yes, no, no. If someone's here, then we can have a proper discussion. Thank you. We now revert to the existing order, and the first matter is relates to the property 178 Smith Street, Summer Hill, which is a modification of existing development consent. I note that Will Nino has listed to speak. Is Mr. Nino here?
Yes.
Do you wish to speak, Mr. Nino, because we've got a certain conclusion that's been reached?
Yes.
Do you want to put something to us?
Good afternoon, panel.
Just don't talk us out of it, that's all I'm saying.
I'm here in support of the application, yes. And essentially to answer to any questions that
all
the
right.
panel may have.
Okay, thank you, that's fine. That's in accordance with what we had in mind. The panel notes the previous development consent considered by an earlier panel did not appreciate the double car parking arrangements. The panel is now satisfied that the proposal as put forward to amend the consent is satisfactory, and accordingly the panel will approve the application in accordance with the recommendations and conclusion, subject to a minor change in the published conditions, in that there's been an oversight by deleting a plan which needs to be reinstated. You've probably observed that yourself, Mr. Nino. And that's, I'll just take you to the plan. It was a ground floor plan of some sort. Where was it? 18. Yes, you will see that the DA06C proposed hard proposed ground, DA07B proposed ground floor Archie Spectrum had been deleted. That's been deleted in error, so that in terms of what's been published, the approval is given. Oh yes, have you got that written down?
Can I ask them a question about it?
Yes, all right. The approval will be given subject to one other matter which will be raised by Ms. Morrell in a moment. In accordance with the conclusions and recommendations and the conditions, subject to the reinstatement of the plan that's been deleted in condition one. There's also a discussion that Ms. Morrell might like to have with you about a canopy tree. If you could just come and have a discussion now, come back to the table, thank you.
The panel considered when we inspected the site that there would be the opportunity to plant at least one, if not two, canopy trees on the site, especially now that the one car space is proposed as opposed to originally two. So would you have any objection to a condition which requires the planting of two endemic canopy trees to reach mature heights of between 4 and 6 metres? Well, I was not aware of that previous landscape plan. I've only got the amendment as the modification as submitted. It could be simply a matter of an additional canopy tree being required in that landscape plan.
That's fine.
Fine. Thank you.
So then, subject to what I said before, there's to be a condition in relation to the canopy tree, in accordance with the indication given by Ms. Morrell. Moving on to item number two.
Do you want to vote?
Oh, we want to vote. We all agree with that, didn't we?
Yes.
Yes, all right. The panel is unanimous in its decision to deal with the application in that way. Thank you.
Aye.
So we move on to item number two, which is 79 Smith Street, Summerhill. And in relation to that matter, the first person listed to speak is Timothy Cohen.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your time and for the visit this morning. I just wish to address two key concerns I have about the proposed development. The first one is the potential for noise emanating from any pool equipment that might be placed close to the boundary. The nature of the space is that it could well reverberate around the place, and of course the intermittent nature of pool equipment means that it'll switch on and off at all hours, and could be quite a concern there. My second main concern is the bulk of the rearmost part of the proposal, the garage and studio above. I believe that that'll be very bulky, affect the visual amenity of our common garden area and the views from quite a number of apartments. The potential for creating a very cold microclimate in our garden, especially in winter, which is already quite a cool spot. But the main concern is the visual amenity and the fact that it needs to be set back and, I believe, not quite so high. So they're my two main concerns, apart from the ones we talked about this morning at the meeting.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you.
Just for the record, what unit number were you from?
19.
No, I remember the unit, but yes. Okay. 19/6775. Yep.
Yep.
Thank you.
And I have six windows in my house, and three of them will be affected by this
development. No, we remember we visited, and you made that terribly clear to us, Mr. Cohen, and thank you for doing so.
Thank you.
The next person that's listed to speak is Ken Schaefer.
Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer.
I also live in the same complex as Timothy, at the front of the complex. My main concern is that the current scale of the proposed design will result in a fairly imposing building. My understanding is it's not currently compliant with the planning guidelines for height, overshadowing, and the setback from the boundary line. As such, it'll create a fairly visually imposing building that's going to look over the backyards of all the four terraces at 67 to 75 Smith Street.
Lift the volume a bit, please.
That's pretty much our main concern, and would kind of object in its current form and request that it be, I guess, scaled down or at least made compliant with the planning guidelines as they stand. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, Mrs. Morrell? Ms. Murrell,
can I just ask you?
Question.
Yeah, just what do you understand the height limit to be and the exceedance?
I don't have that to memory. I just recall from the development application itself, it's stated that it's not compliant with the current height limit in the area.
Thank you.
I can look that up.
No, that's fine. We'll ask the applicant. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. The next person listed to speak is Tim Casey, on behalf of Gladys Casey.
Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Casey.
I'm here to speak on behalf of my 99.95-year-old mother and my 70-year-old disabled sister who live in Unit 5 at 6775. We purchased that building, or that flat, about a year ago. None of this appeared to be on the horizon at the time. Most of the sheds at the back of the property seem to have been demolished with no obvious reason why, and there's a lot of reference in the DA to those sheds without a great deal of information about where they were and what they did and how high they were or anything else. The main issue for my mother is the overarching bulk of the building at the back of the property. Yeah. Her courtyard is a very important part of her life at the moment, and it's going to be well and truly overborne, you could argue, by this building, especially the original one, which was no setback all the way up two floors. And I think, generally speaking, the building is too high. It also appears that way from the front, looking through the open section next to 67 to 75 as well, in my view. However, for her, it's going to create a huge canyon. She's going to be standing, as you saw this morning, in her courtyard, which is a good 4 or 5 feet below ground level. And that was probably done by the original builders of 67 to 75 to reduce the bulk of that particular part of the building. And now it's going to be seriously impacted, in my view, by that building at the back. At the very minimum, I believe that it should be observing the standard 900 setback, and the balcony at the top deleted, the privacy screen deleted, the air conditioning unit deleted, And arguably the bottom floor should be the minimum ceiling height necessary to keep the overall bulk of the building as low as possible. Now, I appreciate that the building at the back of the northern boundary is quite high, but there's not much we can do about that now. All we can do is deal with what's in front of us, and I think it's been a bit of an overdevelopment, in my opinion. The rest of the building is less of an impact, but I wonder whether it's completely in line with what should be happening in Summerhill anyway. So that's my objection. Thank you.
I'll just see if there's any questions. Ms. Morrell? No, thank you for your assistance. Mr. Casey? Nick Hibbard, presumably for the applicant, architect. Thank you, Mr. Yvonne.
Yes, just as the applicant, I'd like to thank Council for all the consultation and the meetings that we've gone through to get us to this point. There were a number of fairly significant compromises that my client has gone through to get us to the point with the plans that you see in front of us. Some of those were at the recommendation of Council officers. Some of them were made in good faith to alleviate some of the concerns of some of the neighbouring properties. As you're well aware of what you saw on site today, there is very large existing developments to the north and the east of this subject site, which is a single residential dwelling. So much of what we've tried to achieve is tried to step down in terms of context and bulk to mitigate against some of the existing bulk of those buildings. Despite some of the compromises that we made in the planning process, nevertheless, there were a series of conditions that have been tabled in the report. 5A, 5D, 5E and 5F, which have significant impacts on the development. Principally, the condition 5A to delete the roof terrace. Unfortunately, the way that the conditions have been worded, it effectively renders the living space of the studio close to uninhabitable. So we would ask that Council either delete that condition or give us an opportunity to come to some sort of more sensible arrangement. Also, with regard...
just stop you there.
Can I just stop you there for one moment? And
sure.
Could you explain that a little bit further, why 5A makes it uninhabitable?
So a lot of the ceiling heights were reduced in the development from the original application. And so in the living space to the studio, there is only a 2.1 high springing point for the ceiling in that studio area. So the new windows that they're proposing to the living space, which are the only windows, will have a sill height of 1600 and a head height of 2.1. So overall, that window can only be 500 mils from top of frame to bottom of frame, and allowing for framing and glass and opening areas, it's not really particularly usable for a living space. I suppose that's what I was typically alluding to. I mean, I do have an image here that demonstrates that sort of the difference from what we were proposing to what council condition has applied. This is the only window to that particular space. I'm happy for that to be passed. We would be happy to seek a little bit more consultation on these conditions. Likewise with the privacy screens to that terrace. Those privacy screens only project 500 millimetres above the rendered masonry base, and to say that they constitute excessive bulk is probably a somewhat marginal call. Again, if you look at the image on this that I can pass around, the difference with and without privacy screens as viewed from the balcony in the development to the east is fairly marginal. So from our perspective, we feel that the privacy concerns to do with that terrace can be fairly successfully managed without any excess bulk added.
Yes, the next point.
Oh, yes. The second condition that I wanted to ask for a bit of consideration of was condition 5D, which is the alteration of the canopy walkway. Now, again, this wasn't something that was mentioned in the numerous consultations we had with councils and the meetings with the heritage people. And the condition is somewhat vague. It doesn't refer to how far it should be lowered, only that it should follow the fall of the land. Now, by my calculations, that if we had an height of the underside of that canopy of 2.4 and fell it sloping towards the flow of the land, then you're actually going to end up with a canopy which is higher than what we've currently proposed, which is quite low. It has a very thin edge to it. There's a gap between the top of the fence and that canopy. So I'm concerned that council, we haven't really had a chance to look at that in much detail. Condition five, just
in that regard,
yes?
What about if that canopy walkway was deleted? I hear what you say and I hear what council said, and I'm just asking you, therefore, is there a need for it?
Okay. In the original application, that canopy wasn't there. What was there in its stead was an enclosed corridor, so basically a floor, two walls and a roof. Now, there wasn't anything specific, correct me if I'm wrong, Jared, in our original correspondence to say that that should be deleted, but in an act of good faith, that enclosed section was deleted, but at a very minimum, a covered walkway area across linking that to the pool area and the study at the back was deemed as required. So I suppose from my client's perspective, there's already been a significant compromise in that area that we've offered up in good faith.
But in effect, it's not necessary.
Well,
there's a secondary dwelling.
Well, there are the accommodation of the secondary dwelling is separate from that. There's the garage and there's also a study space, because we've tried to maintain a very large green space in the centre of the site. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, some of the accommodation needed to be moved to that rear building structure, hence the need for an enclosed corridor initially, that there just wasn't enough space that we felt, working in with our adjoining properties, to get a large enough garden area. Would you like me to continue just on my last couple of points?
Yes, please.
Okay. Condition 5E, again, there was no consultation regarding that condition to change some of the paint colours. There are a couple of smaller low elements adjoining the eastern boundary, which we had painted out a dark colour so that there would be a recessive element adjoining the mass of the main building. So in order to paint them out the same colour as the rest of the development, we feel would be counterproductive in terms of what everyone's trying to achieve. And then the last point is the condition to use...
Just before you move off that point, you heard concerns about light. So could you consider the concerns about reflective light?
In terms of there being a darker colour there, so there's two main box elements that we're talking about. The one closest to Smith Street is at the back of a more substantial garden area associated with the terrace style units at the front of the Smith Street development. You could paint that white, but at the back of a garden area, I wouldn't deem that to be so critical. It's more towards the one at the rear, but I think that the element that I'm talking about is more mid-site. It's not particularly close to that neighbouring area, but I could consult with the client and see whether it might be possible to paint the outside wall that faces the neighbouring property a different colour for that one that's further back, because that one isn't as visible from the street, and in terms of the bulk and feel of the building would have less of an impact if it was a slightly different colour, and if it made a difference in terms of the light coming into that neighbouring property at the back, then that's something that we could possibly consider. I know that the previous submission talked about the light down into those areas. We did produce extensive shadow diagrams through that area to show that the existing large development to the north does create a lot of overshadowing, but what we're doing actually doesn't exacerbate that situation according to our analysis that was confirmed by council.
Mm-hmm. OK, Okay, the next point you were going to comment on?
Okay, just the last point was the condition to use custom orb. Again, there was no consultation regarding this. We had proposed a standing seam finish. When viewed from Smith Street, you wouldn't really be able to perceive much of a difference between the two, but my clients, when they're up close to the building, it would be quite noticeable. Standing seam being more sophisticated, more expensive, better watertight finish than custom orb, which requires face fixings rather than concealed clips. So again, we'd like the chance to input into the design. That's all.
It asked for custom orb, and what have you got in your proposal?
In our proposal, I don't think it actually is explicit about the type of profile. We had intended to go with a product called Longline, which is fairly close to a standing seam zinc style finish. Traditionally, it was a zinc cladding system, but now Colourbond make a series of profiles which are quite similar. It has a slightly wider ridge to it. It has a concealed fixing. It's just a slightly better building product. Given the distance from the street, we really didn't feel there was much benefit in going with a cheaper material in that particular area.
Okay, then. Thank you. And would you like to respond to some of the concerns that you did hear from the neighbours? In particular, if you could address the height.
Yeah, so the height, the building was substantially lowered through the consultation process from the original application. So we feel that in a lot of the areas, we're not asking for an excessive amount. It's a two-storey building. So I'm very happy to sort of defer to the planner's consideration in that. It should also be noted that some of the issues in terms of height have been brought to bear by the fact that the building was required to be raised by, I think, in the order of 500 millimetres in order to satisfy additional flood requirements. Now, the site is not deemed flood prone, so it wasn't part of our original analysis that we needed to adhere to these requirements, but nevertheless it was something that council felt there was a need to address, and that has resulted in the building being a bit higher than was originally stipulated. But again, like I said, a lot of compromises have been made to lower the roofs of the building, and if you look at the ceiling heights, they're not particularly extravagant.
And as I understand it, there's no exceedance in the requirement, the height requirement.
That's correct.
So there's no 4.6 necessary.
That's
how I understood it, yes. Okay. Are there any other of the issues that the neighbours mentioned that you wish to comment on?
Oh, look, it's difficult to respond to all of them. I can understand their concerns that they have properties that they have purchased in these areas. But from my client's perspective, we have worked very hard to try to come up with a scheme which steps down in bulk from the properties to the north and the east. I think it's interesting that the neighbours to the residential properties to the west of us aren't the ones with the issue with regard to bulk and scale. It's the people in the larger overlooking developments. There are very serious privacy issues on the site at the moment. So some of the things that we're trying to do is to protect the amenity of the occupants of the site from a lot of these windows and balconies that overhang the site currently. So I feel we have compromised a fair bit, and we have considered a lot of these the issues to do with the neighbouring properties in terms of bulk and scale particularly.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Hawkes? No question.
I think we should.
Yeah,
take
do you want to do it now?
No, not do it now. I think we should look at the information that we presented as well in the past and the heritage stuff we provided.
Okay.
So we'll do it at the end.
All right. Okay. There have been a number of issues raised, Mr. Hibbard, which the panel would like to consider, and we'll defer the final determination of the matter until 4 o'clock.
Okay. Thank you. What about the other submissions to speak?
Yes, it would. Mr. Yiannakis. Do you still wish to speak? Yes, it's Mr. Alagunaris.
It is indeed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Alagunaris. Did I get that right?
Yes, indeed. I'm the owner of the property. I'd like to just make some very quick points, if I may.
Yes. Firstly, you've listened to the matters that have been discussed during the presentation by your architect.
I have indeed, and I won't be repeating those points unduly. I want to say only that we began this process intent on meeting all planning and heritage requirements. We've worked very, very hard with council to achieve a compromise outcome in a very difficult site. You've seen it yourselves. I want to draw attention only to two issues, one in particular, if I may, and that is the terrace balcony, which is a direct impact on our amenity to the secondary dwelling. While it has been addressed by the architect, it was arranged for me to make these particular points, and they are that the balcony to the side of the building to our east, which has its own large balcony overlooking our backyard directly, currently has a much more significant relationship with our use of that backyard. Any oral or visual privacy is actually transgressed much more directly by that than it would be by a screened terrace. I would say with regard to the screened terrace in the context of the council's report, the council report, and you know, I must emphasise that I appreciate the work of councillors, but the council report does allude to not knowing why this balcony was achieved, because it goes back into the annals of Ashfield Council. It's clear from conversations with council officers and so on that it was approved by negotiation, and I think to some extent by the Land and Environment Court. It is not a mistake, it's a standard. It's a standard. We are not seeking to meet, leave alone, exceed that standard. We don't want to, by one additional balcony or terrace, meet that established standard. We are less than that in that we are further away from our current activity and are proposing a screen. So in fairness, by principles of fairness and equity, our one balcony would should be allowed to avail itself of the same amenity as the existing balcony, in fact less amenity as such. The main point with regard to the submissions by our neighbours, which we appreciate, we have, as our architects have gone out of our way to preemptively address this, a lot of the concerns that we saw addressed, is that I'm not clear, I have to be, and I don't think you're in a position to be, whether they're responding to the amended plans or the original plans, because we are not non-compliant in many of the areas that have been raised as non-compliant. And we have addressed all the issues to the point where council officers saw fit to recommend. So thank you for your consideration. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Alagunaris. You got any questions? Any questions for Mr. Alagunaris, the owner? Thank you. And as you heard with our exchange with Mr. Hibbard, we'll announce the determination at 4 o'clock. Moving on now to item number 3. This is where we do get. Mr. Alagunaris, Gunaris again.
Yes. And therefore would like to very, very briefly speak if I get an opportunity. So the next item, actually, not for this one.
Oh, I see. You're down twice. Down three times. All right, we'll go straight to Mr. Hibbard. Are you suggesting?
No.
All right. Well, in that case, that's Mr. Yiannakis. Yiannakis, is that right?
That's right.
Right. Good. Thank you, Mr. Yiannakis. Thank you.
Recommended that it be approved.
Yes, so I've only got one small point to make, and it was actually raised in the by Mr. Hibbard in 79 in relation to the condition of the cladding material to be used.
Oh, yes.
At no stage throughout the consultation process, which again we appreciate Council's part in this, we were never informed there was a preference of one type of cladding over another. If we had have known, we would have attempted to resolve this matter sooner.
This is about custom ordered cladding.
Yep. So, although Nick has touched on it, I'll just repeat out my points. The difference in profile will only be marginally different when you can view it from, as you have seen our property today, viewing it from
can
Smith
just
Street.
Help me quickly while you're talking, what condition it is?
Sorry, it's the, I think it's 5...
5B.
Yeah.
19? 5B. 5B, thank you.
So when viewed from Smith Street, the difference in profile will only be marginally different to the average person, whereas for us, the owners, the occupants, up close, there will be a substantial difference. They'll look quite different. The custom wall profile being a cheaper style of cladding and requires ugly surface fixing screws to be used. The preferred long lime cladding that we've suggested achieves a greater air and water tightness, which is critical when approaching cladding solutions. So I guess with respect to that point, we would have, you know, be open to having some sort of discussion with council. We had the preference over that, but this wasn't raised to us before, and perhaps we would have been able to sort that out prior.
Looking at condition 5B, are you suggesting simply that the words custom orb be replaced with long line?
Yes.
Cladding profile.
Yes, please. That's what
I see. All right.
We've got a picture here if you want.
Yes, actually,
yeah, I think there's not a full understanding of what the difference is. Jay. Do it on a different part of the building.
It's the same material, just essentially in a different shape.
This is what's requested, and this is what they want to do.
That's what the council specified. This is what they want to do instead. What's the difference?
We generally use custom wool.
Sorry?
But we generally use custom wool.
But it's only a habit, is it?
Yes.
And this is not visible from Smith Street.
It will be, because it's on the rear, you will see from some. The distance is so far.
Do you find it a significant change?
I don't think it's
no, not right. Highly visible.
You don't care?
No.
Do you care?
Okay, so no. Someone asked me, I prefer that.
Yeah.
It's a taste thing.
But do you care?
I don't. It's hardly visible from the
it's
public domain.
I think
we've got it resolved.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's in your thing too,
yes.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, is there anything else that do you... wish to put?
No, thank you.
Mr. Yiannakis?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hibbert, is that the only point you would have raised?
Yes.
And the same with Mr. Yes, it's all right. It's okay. I've got
no,
it.
No, it's
just... Yeah. All right. Well,
is the panel still prepared to unanimously agree to do that subject and amending that condition?
Are you happy to do it?
Okay.
Yes. Yes, the panel's conferred, and the panel is unanimous in determining that the application be approved in accordance with the recommendations and conclusions provided in the officer's report to this meeting, subject to the conditions which are adopted apart from condition 5B, which should be altered to delete the words in inverted commas custom orb and instead insert the words long line cladding. And that's a unanimous decision to approve the application in those terms.
Thank you.
Moving on to item number four. this is the tree, I think. Is anyone want to speak? Where is it?
The architect and the owner's still there?
Yes, they might be, but it's item number four. Yes, Mr. Hibbard?
I think it would be more focused for the
Mr. Yiannakis, you want to speak again?
Yes. Yes, please.
Yes.
So I think it's important that the term property should be looked at in the whole context and applied as it was applied in ECOL and the Inner West Council, where it refers to the entire property. So this includes front porch, front path, the entire property as a whole. So based on the reports provided and your inspection today, you would have seen evident the damage to the front path and the front porch that was caused by the tree through the action of the roots. That was, as we believe, and based on the reports, a threat to human life and property within that broad definition. Council's approach has been focused on the damage of the building rather, and is not on the rectifiable damage that they call, rectifiable damage to the fence and front path. Any rectification would be temporary and there's a high risk of recurrence unless the roots are removed, which would impact on the viability of the tree as in the arborist report. Also, the council asserts there may be other causes, but provides no evidence for this hypothesis. Although there may be other causes contributing, it's likely the major cause based on the reports is due to the tree, and as in Smith and Zanifford and Zhang and Zhu in 2011, the tree must be a cause but does not have to be the sole cause. We've provided evidence that to be able to excavate would require removing heritage material that would need to rectify to meet council requirements, which is just unreasonable. Although the cracks are rectifiable, our experts' opinion suggests that there would be a high risk of recurrence. It would be expensive and inappropriate to expect us to continue to repair internal cracks. In terms of safety, the council memo that was provided recently to the panel does not at any point address issues of safety. Let the record show that despite our specific references to our family circumstances, my wife who's here has multiple sclerosis and we have 20-month-old twins and thus a greater need than normal to assure safe passage to the front door in a small frontage property. This has not been addressed by council. This is a key human and legal issue and it's been studiously avoided in all correspondence. And to us, it must reasonably be taken that the council does not regard that as an important issue and they therefore accept responsibility. Also, in light of, as you've seen with our design for the house, what's come towards us is a sort of paradoxical opinion regarding a heritage property. We've been pulled in two separate ways by council. Through the DA relating to a house, there were substantive heritage values and the importance of those, and we've met those. However, when we've put to council that the damage is causing to this heritage property, we're told we can't remove the tree. So there's two different approaches that have been taken. And finally, council has referred to submissions provided against the application, but there's been no weight to given to submissions in favour. The owner of 87 has made submissions particularly about damage, but also 85, 83 and 79, all adjoining heritage properties who have a direct actual direct interest in the tree have shown that it is in impact, whereas council have presented the view that a removal is not based on in the public interest, based on its asserted negative impacts on the amenity of adjoining properties, which, I mean, these letters of support fly in the face of that. So, in summary, the council office position does not meet a common sense standard. We are for the environment. We want more leaf cover. We suggest we're happy to replace that. We're not seeking to remove an inconvenience. Pro-environment policies and practices need themselves to be sustainable and they need to be reasonable. We love the neighbourhood. We just want to be able to help restore an old terrace into something that the community can be proud of and more importantly that it's a home that's safe for my wife and my children to live in.
Thank you for your assistance. Oh. Instead of 4 and 6, all right. Okay. That's the last offer. Okay. Yes, the council's given some consideration to this matter where the reports have been a little difficult to interpret in a way, but notwithstanding the arborist and officer's report, which tend to prefer preservation of the tree or at least tolerate it, the panel concedes that it's far too big to ensure the integrity of this subject property's part of the heritage item, and will be likely to cause significant detriment not so far into the future. The panel approves the application subject to the conditions at pages 320 to 326 of the report, subject to an alteration to condition 4, which I will just look up, and it's in relation to the replacement tree. And that condition, did I say condition 4? Yes, it's condition 11. Condition 11, delete the reference to 8 metres. It's considered that's too big again. And in lieu of 8, insert 4 to 5 metres. And then in the last line of that same paragraph, insert the words be endemic and, so that the sentence reads the tree is to conform, the tree is to be endemic and conform to AS 2303 tree stock for landscape use. That's a unanimous decision of the panel.
Thank you.
We now move on to item number 5, which is 33 Smith Street, Summer Hill. And I'll just try to work my way through this. Number 5, Mr. Hong Fu. Ms.
Yes.
Sorry.
Thank you. No, that's
Ms.
All right.
Hong Fu. They don't designate that particular piece of information,
that's right.
So I wasn't. Hope I didn't cause you an offence.
Not at all.
Thank you.
Thank you. I am the owner and resident of the house at 29 Smith Street, Summer Hill. I am speaking against the Section 4.55 modification application at 33 Smith Street, my neighbour. I understand the applicant has a right to redevelop the site. However, the modified proposal results in non-compliance with the relevant planning controls, which will create adverse impacts upon the amenity of my property and adjoining residences. The council gave initial DA consent conditional on deletion of a fourth floor terrace, given the opposition of more than 100 locals. The developers have ignored this by proposing a fourth story, which is 14% in excess of the 9-metre LEP height standard, non-compliant with the ADG building separation criteria, and non-compliant with Clause 16A of the SEP ARH, as it is not compatible with character of the local area. These non-compliances result in the following impacts. The fourth story significantly adversely impacts on the character of the local area and adjacent Fleet Street heritage and quarantine ground conservation areas. The significance of these areas relates to their mix of heritage period housing, which range in heights of 1 to 2 storeys and provide varying roof forms reflective of the 9-metre height standard. A fourth storey does not provide a transition in built form to surrounding 2-storey buildings and heritage conservation. Its height will dominate the surrounding buildings. The principal private open space areas of dwellings at 27 to 29 Smith Street appear to receive less than 3 hours of sunlight access between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. on June 21 as a result of the proposed fourth storey. I requested further detailed solar access diagrams to illustrate how each space will not be additionally overshadowed, but this was not provided. A window proposed to the eastern elevation of the first floor communal corridor of the front building has a 5-metre direct sight line into a habitable window of my home, resulting in a 7-metre non-compliance with minimum ADG building separation criteria. To protect the significance of the adjoining heritage conservation areas, character of the local area, and solar access to adjoining private open space areas, the modification application must be refused. Should the panel be of the mind to support the proposed modification, it is recommended the matter be deferred and the applicant amend the proposal to include, at a minimum, the following three conditions. Redesign of the fourth storey to include an attic with dormer window or mansard roof to read as a three-storey building, similar to the front building and consistent with local character and heritage. Provision of a view assessment from various key viewpoints from the street and adjoining properties to illustrate the difference between a fourth storey and attic mansard roof. I'm perplexed how the council could be satisfied the fourth storey proposal would be compatible with character of the local